You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To learn more, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. I'm Derek Duman, OBCA Vice President and Boys Basketball Coach at West Albany High School. Today, I'm joined by Casey Bunn Wilson, Women's Basketball Coach at Linfield University. Coach, how are you doing today?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. I want to say thank you, of course, for joining us. Excited to talk hoops with you here for the next little bit.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. For those people maybe that don't know you real well or don't know a little bit about your background in hoops, can you give us a little bit of that information, how you got started in hoops, how you got into coaching, and then how you ended up as the head women's coach at Linfield?
Yeah, definitely. So I grew up in Staten, just southeast of Salem, small town there. So went to high school there. And then I got the opportunity to play at Oregon State and get my degree. So I played there and then had a pretty good career that gave me the opportunity to play overseas. So I played professionally in Greece, Spain, Portugal, and Australia for about 4 years. And then decided it was time to be done and get closer to the family. And so came back and started a youth program. It was called the Junior Energy Program. It was a youth basketball, just local in Portland. And then got on as assistant coach at Lake Oswego High School for the girls team. And I was there for 2 years. And then I got the opportunity to coach at Tualatin High School. So I became the head coach at Tualatin. And I was there for 3 years, really happy. I had just got on as the school to career coordinator full time. So really happy at Tualatin. And then a mentor of mine told me about the Linfield job, that it was open. And I didn't have any desire to leave at the time. I was really happy. Felt like I was just settling in my third year. But I interviewed and got the job. And so, gosh, I'm going into my seventh year at Linfield. So that's kind of how it happened, how I got here. Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt. I want to ask about your time abroad. I mean, that obviously was probably a pretty cool experience, getting to travel the world and play basketball. I'm curious, how is basketball different overseas than playing over here in the States?
There's a lot of differences. Kind of depends on what country you play in. You know, Greece and Spain were really hard in terms of language barrier. You know, a lot of, they spoke English, but during game time, I mean, they're speaking their language. And so I had an interpreter, so that was hard. And then, you know, so I felt like I got called for fouls a lot in my first season. They just, you know, I was used to Pac-10 at the time, Pac-12 now, obviously. I was used to, you know, the physicality of all that, and I was, like, in foul trouble almost every game. So that was a huge adjustment. But, you know, a lot of similarities, like similar drills, plays obviously were the same. I just had to adjust by and learn by watching, which was a whole new world.
Yeah, no doubt. Is there anything that maybe you learned over there that you take with you now in your coaching at Linfield?
A lot of different coaching experiences. You know, I had those 4 years I was playing, I played in different countries and had different coaches. And so I take a lot of different things from each coach, you know, in college as well, like what to take on and what to kind of not do. So just taking those experiences, and then I learned a ton of drills, a lot of different drills than I had learned in college playing overseas. So I implement a lot of the drills I get overseas into my practices now, which is cool. Just styles and different coaching approaches, I think. Again, what to take and kind of leave behind or what not to do. But I just think those experiences really helped me out in coaching and just having those different experiences through playing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's awesome. So I personal question, I guess, more of it. Can you say help side in a variety of different languages since you've played in different countries, coach? Is that a
unfortunately not. I can't really remember. I think I just yelled it and they knew I was there. regardless of what I said, they could hear I was there.
That's awesome. Well, great teaching point for the rest of us, right? If you're getting on kids, you need them to talk more. It doesn't matter what language you speak in, but as long as you're speaking, right, we know someone's there to help.
Yeah,
them.
Exactly.
Perfect. I like it. We just finished a very strange year, obviously, for everybody with the pandemic. And obviously, it's not quite over, but it looks like the light's at the end of the tunnel here. But especially basketball-related, it was very different. I'm curious, you know, as you reflect on this past season, what are some of the things that you take, key takeaways from the season?
Oh, yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think every coach can agree we had to get very creative with all of our limitations. So, you know, we found some different drills that we could do, you know, and still distance and maintain all the policies and procedures that they had in place. But I think the biggest takeaway and something that I'll continue to do is more check-ins with my players. You know, it was a very emotional year for everybody. And are we going to play? Are we not going to get a play for our seniors? And, you know, so just being able to check in with them more and just see how they're doing in general outside of basketball was a huge thing that I think we're going to continue to do. And then as far as like, I think the biggest thing basketball wise was, we couldn't all be in the weight room like we normally are. And so we had to get really creative in terms of going through the park, being outside, training outdoors, and then training in our gym where there's a lot more space and just, you know, doing some weightlifting or functional circuit training type stuff there that I really like that I'm going to continue to do.
That's awesome. I like it. Yeah. Well, I think the check-in is key too, right? I've talked to other coaches across the state. That's been the big one. Is just spending more time not talking about hoops mm-hmm. with our players because it was all of us were going through something with that
yeah.
last year. So how often, I'm curious, did you check in with players this past season and how did that compare to what you did previously?
Yeah, so in a typical year, we usually meet once a month. We call them birthday meetings. So the birthday we meet on those days every month. And so this year we ended up checking in about once a week just because there were so many changes with our season and week to week we didn't know what was happening. So it ended up being either a text or a quick phone call weekly. And I think going forward during the season it'll probably be twice a month, just not as much, but then a little bit more than we had been doing.
Yeah, that's awesome. And in those meetings, like the birthday meetings, for example, which I actually think is a really cool idea, is it mostly talking about hoops or is it more talking about non-hoop related stuff?
It's really player led. Like I'll ask about grades and make sure they're doing okay in their classes. And then, you know, so I have them initiate the birthday meetings. So I'm like, schedule your birthday meetings. And they're like, coach, you know, my birthday meeting's coming up. When do you have time this week? And so we'll schedule it. And so sometimes it's just like, yeah, everything's good. And it's a 5-minute conversation. And sometimes it's like that opportunity for them to really open up about what's been going on and what they're struggling with. So it kind of varies. And that's what I like so much about it is it's just, it's up to them. And, you know, the more that they come in and, it's not like the I'm sent to the principal's office type feeling anymore. It's
right.
Kind of like just going and check in with coach and talking about my day and what's going on. And honestly, at the girls level, I don't know if this happens on the men's side, but you know, they talk to me about boyfriends or different friendship struggles or, you know, whatever. And I think that's one of my favorite parts about being a coach at this level is that they feel comfortable and I'm kind of that person for them away from home, to just kind of navigate through all life things, especially in college, such a huge transition for young adults. So,
right.
Yeah, it's kind of up to the player and what they want to talk about. Sometimes we'll watch film and talk hoops. If it's during the season, you know, they'll want to watch film with me and take extra time to do that. And so, yeah, I really just leave it up to them.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's awesome. You know, you talked about a little bit earlier about making the jump from high school to college. If there's other coaches out there that are maybe interested in doing the same, what advice would you have for them, or suggestions for making that jump?
I think the biggest difference was the recruiting aspect, right? Cause, you know, at Tualatin, I didn't have that, obviously. But, yeah, I think the biggest transition, or, you know, something I had, the big learning curve, I guess, was the recruiting process and all the NCAA rules. I know NAIA and JUCO would be different in terms of college coaching, but NCAA has a lot of rules. So learning those quickly, I got the job in May, and then, you know, I was out recruiting in June. So wanting to do a good job and do things by the book and do it the right way while learning was tough, but I would say that was the biggest obstacle for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, speaking of, you know, college rules, NCAA has made some big changes recently with obviously name, image, and likeness, and the transfer portal has become a much bigger thing. I'm curious kind of your take and thoughts, and how is it maybe affecting you and what you guys do at Linfield?
I'm not sure the name, image, likeness would be such a huge deal at the D3 level. I can't imagine what it's going to be like at D1 level. I'm kind of thankful I'm not there right now with all of that.
Right.
But I'm not sure, you know, we haven't seen a lot of it now. I think it's great for athletes to have those different opportunities. I think on a compliance level, it's kind of going to be a nightmare, but, you know, I think, yeah, athletes work really hard at their craft, and, you know, they should be rewarded for that. And just kind of, it's going to be tough to be able to regulate that.
Yeah.
But at Linfield, I don't know, haven't seen anything happening, or can't predict any too much changes in terms of that.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious, obviously, maybe it's different because at the D3 level, I'm just curious, you know, with the transfer portal, obviously, as high school coaches, as most of our listeners are, that's kind of affecting how colleges are recruiting our kids as well, right? So,
you know,
some college coaches might be looking in the transfer portal instead of at seniors or juniors or whatever. I'm kind of curious, you know, maybe what you're doing with that, or what you have seen going on with that, and how can we as maybe high school coaches help our kids that are trying to go play at college, you know, compete against the transfer portal kids?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, well, I can only speak for us. Like, when we look for transfers, you know, we're looking for some experience and maybe just one or two. And so I don't think that we disregard bringing in freshmen, because you need, you know, continue your class. But it might be, you know, a couple people left or decided to stop playing, and then we need some experience coming in for that next year. So I wouldn't see a huge change up with that. Trying to think. Yeah, I mean, if you're a senior in high school, you know, you still need to do your due diligence and reach out to coaches and that you're interested in those schools, and, you know, be proactive in doing that, not just kind of sitting and waiting and hope that a coach contacts you. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
I always appreciate when kids are already interested in Linfield and they've done the research and they know what they want to study and they already know what they love about the campus and they just want to learn more about the basketball program. And that makes our job obviously easy, but it's showing interest already. So I don't know if that's everyone's situation, but that's ours
right.
For now, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that's great. You know, you see, you recruit kids, obviously they come in as freshmen and probably have a wide range of, you know, skills or ability. And you probably see bad habits of all sorts of, in all sorts of kinds and types. I'm curious, what are some things the past 6 or 7 years that you've seen maybe in your incoming freshmen that we can do as high school coaches to better prepare kids for the college level?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that the biggest thing is having them understand that they're going to college to play basketball because they're one of the best or the best on their team. And that's everybody's case that's coming into college, right? So it's okay if you go from starting, being team captain, team scoring leader, or whatever, to not being that in college right away. And I think that is a huge piece of information that a lot of freshmen maybe need to hear before they get here. You know, and some freshmen come in and play, and our philosophy is if they're ready, they're ready. It doesn't matter the age. But I know it's really hard for freshmen to come in after, and maybe fitting more than they're used to after being top dog on their team. But that's everybody. So that's one of the big ones. The other struggle I've seen is time management. This is outside of basketball, but time management, you know, first time away from home, you're not having your parents tell you to sit down and do your homework before you can go hang out. You know, you're going there for school and you need to keep up on your grades or you won't be eligible, and just learning those kind of things too. Again, on the basketball side, I've seen a lot of kids that come in that aren't used to playing man defense. A lot of schools have gone to zone, which is great. But just knowing both or understanding, you know, both is helpful. And then just knowing, like, terminology is going to be different. Like, I might not use the same terminology as your high school coach, and, you know, there's 100 ways it's going to cat or whatever the saying is. But, you know, it's the same concept. But I think kids get so caught up on, like, oh, I've never learned that before. Oh, this is how I was always taught this. And, you know, it's the change. I don't think kids are – I mean, the change is hard anyways, but the high school to college – change is significant. So just having an open mind, right? whatever is asked of you, you do, and you take on that role until you can change it and do the best you can.
Yeah. And it's a new beginning, right? The Giannis interview, he talked about what you've done in the past is your ego, you know, what you're doing in the future is pride, and what you're doing right now is being humble, sort of thing, right? Because when you start in college, like, to your point, you're no longer the best player, probably, right? Unless you're really,
hopefully,
really gifted.
Right,
exactly. So I'm kind of having to start from the beginning again, which can be tough. Like you said, change is difficult for many kids, but for sure.
Yeah.
You talked a little bit about, you know, recruiting process and the differences between high school and college. And you know, we as high school coaches, part of our job is to help kids that we have that maybe want to play at the next level. What are some things that we as high school coaches can do better or improve on or should be really focusing on within the recruiting process to help our kids?
Yeah, I think I read somewhere that 7% of high school kids play in college. So that's not a huge percentage. So whatever level you're playing is awesome. You know, and I think just educating your high school players on the different levels and kind of educating them on the ins and outs of each one. Like, you know, D1 obviously is very different from D3 and D2 and NAIA and JUCO, and just what best fits that kid. Because I think everybody has these visions of grandeur, like, oh, I'm going to go D1 and that's all I'm going to shoot for. And if I don't get it, then I'm a failure. And, you know, I don't, in being at the D3 level, it's given me a completely different perspective on how many opportunities there are to continue playing that's not the Division I level. And for some kids, that's great, and it's a perfect fit. Division I is awesome, and that's their jam. But for a lot of kids, it's not. You know, D3 is the – I think we have the highest number of universities at a D3 level, so – or the biggest amount. Maybe there's a ton. So just educating them on the different levels and what that means in scholarships and – you know, levels of play. If you can get your high school team to watch some games at different levels, you know, obviously D1's on TV, but D2's or D3's, and I don't know, just educating them on something other than Division I from a D3 coach, that's important for me.
For sure. And understanding the scholarship part of it, too, would be my assumption, right? Because I think a lot of kids, yeah, like, oh, I want to get a scholarship to go play. And obviously, mm-hmm, a school like Linfield, it's private, tuition is more, but, you know, they also have a little bigger endowment to give a little more money for academic purposes.
Yes.
So exactly. You're still getting a scholarship, yeah, just not,
yes,
not in the byline, it doesn't say basketball, right?
Exactly, right. You're still getting a scholarship. I think that kids get hung up on that. And I, again, what you said earlier, it's an ego thing, right? Like, you want to go where it's going to be the best fit for you. A lot of kids go D1 that's not the best fit, and they end up transferring in the transfer portal. And, you know, I think educating on what would be the best fit, like having a top five priorities for each kid. Is it atmosphere, location? Do they have the major that I want? Then the financial piece of it, scholarships and what my family can do or can't do or what I'm searching for. I just think talking with high school players, it's like, okay, what are you looking for? And, you know, they might say, like, you know, a fun team atmosphere and, you know, a good positive environment and those kind of things are awesome. But what do you want to study? You know, have you thought about where you'd be living, like, in terms of different atmosphere in that, you know, an environment of, like, I'm from Oregon, I don't want to go to Arizona, or, you know, I'm from Arizona, I need to get out of the heat, let me go to Washington or Oregon, and just kind of thinking about those outside of basketball scenarios and what would best fit them, I think would be helpful, or at least help them narrow down. Like, I know through high school, I was hell bent on going East Coast until my junior, senior year. And I was like, no, I want to stay close to family. Like, that's important to me. So. Mm-hmm.
Right. And those priorities change over the years sometimes too, to that point, right?
Yeah.
So you talk to kids, yeah, as a sophomore, it's going to change as a junior. And
yeah.
Keeping that in the forefront for sure.
Definitely.
All right. We're going to take a break. We'll return with more from Coach Bud Wilson right after this on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, as you prepare for the upcoming season, don't forget to renew your OBCA membership. Membership includes access to exclusive resources from high school coaches across the country, as well as access to Lucio Sports Technology, the same technology used by NBA franchises. Membership starts at just $15. Don't delay. Renew your OBCA membership today.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Derek Duman here with Linfield University women's basketball coach, Casey Bunn Wilson. Coach, my next question is for you to describe what a typical practice would look like. So, in other words, if I were to come watch you guys practice, what would I feel? What would I see? What would I hear? What would that experience be like?
Well, hopefully you'd see a lot of people working hard. Hopefully you'd feel the energy in there. And you'd see a lot of movement. Our practices are about 2 hours in the beginning, and then after that they get a little bit less as we go because they're just, we try to emulate games where it's quick. I try not to talk a lot. We go from one drill to the next, and it's competing, and, you know, there's a winner or a loser, and then we're running for mistakes or, you know, just high energy type of practice. We'll usually start out with obviously a warm up and then get into a competitive drill right away just to get them going. There's a year where we weren't having the very good first quarter, and so it's kind of translate that back to how our practices are. And, you know, thought about, you know, our practices kind of start slow, we kind of get into it, then we go about the middle of practice, you know, then we start ramping things up. And so I switched it up a couple years in, so right off the bat we get into a competitive drill and then kind of keep it going from there.
That's awesome.
So a lot of competitions.
Yeah. Do you guys do any skill development within your in-season practices, or is that primarily for off-season?
So the D3 level, this is one of my gripes. We don't get them outside of October 15th through hopefully we go into the March. So any off-season stuff is on them. It's all player ran, whether it's open gyms or, you know, different shooting skill sessions. And so we have to do a lot of it in practice. Mm-hmm. And so we do. We do a lot of fundamentals. We have this drill called Perfection Six, and it's literally dribbling, passing, and shooting either jumpers or layups or threes. But it's ton of repetition, and we have to work on that every day. You know, fundamentals are so important, and everyone wants to do the Kobe fadeaway or step back or whatever. But if you can't pass or dribble, you're not going to get to that. So we do work on fundamentals every day in some form. And I try to mix up the drills to for the players, you know, to keep them going and not get bored on things. But yeah, fundamentals is huge for us. Yeah. Different skills, even like inside pivot, outside pivot, or, you know, coming off of a jab step, how you're attacking the basket, those kind of things, how you're coming off screens, and really working on eliminating false steps and being explosive off your first dribble, those kind of things, on top of obviously rebounding and defense technique and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And your perfect or perfection six drill, is that competitive?
It is competitive against the clock. Yeah.
Right. Gotcha. Perfect.
So yeah, the whole team they have to do six of these drills that we have perfect. And if they miss or they drop a ball or miss the pass, then they have to redo it. And so they have to do it essentially under 6 minutes.
Gotcha. Cool.
Which is actually more of a mental drill than anything.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's just competing as yourself, right? You're still competing in some way, but yeah, two birds with one stone there. So.
Yeah, exactly.
What are some things that if I were to maybe follow you for a season, things that I would hear you say a lot, call them like coachisms or, you know, my last name's Duman, so I call them Dumanisms, things that I find myself saying kind of over and over again, or another way to think about it is things that if I asked your team to do a skit about you, like what are the things that they would imitate you saying kind of over and over again through practice and games or off the court even?
Let me think of a hard one. I'm trying to think of, well, I am a big motivator on the sideline. So I'm always talking, always clapping. So they would probably imitate me doing that. I'm always saying team first mentality. I would probably say that's my biggest thing. You know, we're not playing with a team first mentality right now, or, you know, instead of basically saying, instead of you're being selfish, you know, team first mentality. So they would know exactly what that means or how to adjust off of that. They know I don't like hands on the knees. They know I don't like any eye rolling, none of that flies. But we like to have fun. There's a lot of laughing in practice when it's appropriate, you know, and
right.
I think the upperclassmen learn that a little bit better than the underclassmen. They kind of have to reel them back in. But yeah, I would just say that, you know, we get in and get out and work hard and get the stuff done that we need to, and then go home and go and get your homework done, basically, at the D3 level. Like, that's a huge thing. So
for sure.
I would just, team first mentality would probably be the biggest one that stands out.
Yeah. Which I think is great. And sometimes easier said than done, right? So
mm-hmm.
I mean, how do you teach or coach team first mentality?
So we meet weekly. We call them cat chats. And we just talk about the mental side of the game. So we meet as a team and we go over, I read the book Mind Gym with my players, and they each, it's actually really good for a team setting because there's a chapter, and each chapter doesn't coincide with the next. They're all kind of its own little story and lesson. And so I have each of my players read that to the group or summarize it and then talk about how it relates to the team and themselves and then just real life. And we learn a lot of like team first mentality lessons in that. you know, if you're sitting the bench more than you'd like, or rolls, or one of them is white noise, and so like all the distractions outside of basketball. So we learn it in that, and I would say I teach it best in those conversations in our weekly meetings, and what that means, or what a good teammate looks like, what does a good leader look like, what does a bad leader look like, what is something that we don't want in our program, or we don't want people to lead, and just, you know, think the mental side, how do you approach the game, what are you telling yourself after mistakes, because those things all play into the next play mentality is another one that my team would say, that I say a lot, just on to the next thing, you can't go back and fix it, right? So how are you talking to yourself after those mistakes are made? And it's really, I think, in the girls' game especially, it's confidence is huge. So just continuing to build on their confidence. Yeah, that kind of roundabout way answered the question, I think.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah. So if you see something that's not maybe team-first mentality, how do you deal with that? Is it just really quick? Is it just you just tell them team-first mentality, or are you having conversations with them one-on-one, or in front of the team? What might that look like?
It kind of depends on what it is. I'm less likely to call a player out, you know, if it's something she's struggling with, like on an individual level. If it's like lack of work ethic or not making good decisions or completely being trigger happy and shooting shots she shouldn't be shooting, you know, I'll just be like, that's not team first. You know, you're not playing team first right now. And then individually I'll talk to them about what does that look like and ask them, do you think you're playing team first? Yeah, no, or whatever, you know, whatever they say. And like I said, every situation is so different. I try and handle those all differently. But if it's a very obvious, like, selfish type of thing, then I will most definitely call them out in front of the team.
Mm-hmm.
Because everybody needs to hear that, right? If it's more of, like, decision-making and I just think their basketball IQ needs to improve or they're just not seeing what we're teaching, then it's something I'll spend more time with them on individually.
So you talked a little bit about you know, the book and talking about roles and things of that nature, which I wanted to ask you about, because one of the hard teams in college, as you had mentioned earlier, is everybody comes in as the star, the captain, or the best player, and then now you have kids that have to change their roles and adapt to what's going on. So how do you kind of manage those expectations and set those roles and then work with kids to maybe change their role if that's something that they're looking to do?
Yeah, I think that is a difficult thing. And again, it varies with each athlete, but that's why we do so many competitions and we keep track of scores and stats during practice and things. And so, you know, it's pretty obvious to see whether in our competitions that we go head to head, if someone's like the same, you know, competing for the same position, we'll put them up against each other, obviously. And so they can kind of see that themselves or kind of see where they are. There's not very often where I have somebody come in and just be like, you know, I think I'm better than so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. So I'm lucky I don't have to deal with that kind of stuff very often. But I think we just try to keep it as competitive as possible in practice. And then they can kind of see where they fit, right? Like you can kind of see so-and-so is doing really well. Oh, I'm struggling at this. I need to do better at this. And so the roles kind of fit into that. And then in our meetings, we talk about whether it's birthday meetings or beginning of year meetings and what that looks like. Like, this is where we see you. How do you feel about it? What do you think? This is what we see. If you don't like it, these are some things that you can do to help maybe change it or evolve that role. But, you know, this is where we see you right now. So they're going to accept it or they're not. They want to get playing time or not. So it's kind of,
right.
You know, it's kind of the things where it's like, this is where we see you right now. I understand you want to be here, but this is what you have to do to get there. Mm-hmm. So we're pretty upfront with them. I mean, I think as a player, they respect the honesty, whether they like it or not. I think if you approach them the right way or talk to them about it in a way that, like, everybody, we're here to help everybody and we want everybody to win and be successful, and what's going to be the best for the team right now and in the long run is if they do this, this, and this. I think just being upfront with them and what you see and what they need to work on, I think, is really powerful.
Yeah. I want to ask about film, which is obviously a super valuable tool that, that we all use regardless of level. And you guys have a little more time to maybe watch film than a high school coach, as you would know. Mm-hmm. As a high school coach, it's a little trickier to spend maybe extra time or focused intentional time on film. So I'm kind of curious, how do you use film with your players, and how maybe from your experience in high school, or how might a high school coach adapt what you guys are doing to still find it as useful at the high school level?
Yeah, well, we have this program I discovered when I got here at Linfield. It's called Synergy, and it's amazing. And it breaks down every piece of film that you could ever imagine, like to the, like, every player jump shot, or every time this player misses a right-hand layup, like, you can click and they've broken it down for you and you can watch that. Obviously, at the high school level, I used Huddle, which was similar. I don't think the breakdown was as elaborate, but it was very similar. So I think just watching, I mean, if you could carve out some time, whether it's team or, like, guard versus post or position film watching, I think is really useful at whatever you're able to do with your program, because there's this misconception of what I think I'm doing on the court, and then I watch myself and I'm like, oh, that's not what I thought. You know, so I think at whatever level your kids can watch themselves play, I think is really good.
Yeah, do you have any suggestions? I'll just speak from personal experience. I'm sure other coaches have had this same experience. But sometimes I feel like I'm watching film, and we're watching as a team, for example, right? And kids are pretty easily distracted, especially as high schoolers. I'm curious if there's anything you do to maybe create buy-in in watching film, or if there's anything you've done in the past to do that.
Well, I encourage them. Are you, like, talking about watching your team after a game? Or, like,
right.
Or watching it. Yeah. So, because we do a lot of, like, scouting and stuff from other teams, too. But if we're watching ourselves, you can watch one game and see it 100 different ways, right? Or be watching or paying attention to 100 different things. So I encourage my players to watch their position. If they're not in, watch the person that plays their position. I have them focus maybe on three different things, like our hands up on defense. Are we sprinting the lanes? Are we making good shot selections or good? Are we running our plays properly? Or, like, you know, I might run a couple of series and then ask them what plays were we running there, or what could we have done differently? And so it's almost like we're not just watching the whole game. It's broken up, whether I pause it and fast forward or rewind a bunch and only get through maybe the first quarter. You know, because that could take a half hour.
Right.
So I think just breaking it up that way seemed to help. And then same thing at the college level, like somebody will trip or, you know, somebody will miss a wide open lay and everyone starts laughing and you're like, okay. And that's just, I don't know, part of it, I guess. But
yeah.
And it's hard to not watch. You know, like, oh my gosh, I remember this play. I just totally goofed up and it's embarrassing. And, you know, and I always tell them, like, watching film on you is hard. Like, I would get roasted all the time in college, and it's hard, but we just have to lean into it and watch it and fix it and get better from it and learn as much as we can.
Right.
So.
Yeah. Along those same lines, you know, you talk about, you know, Huddle and Synergy. I think we'd probably maybe do something similar with kind of analytic wise breaking down how your teams play. What analytics do you guys use with your team?
So Synergy is, like I said, it's incredible. I mean, it breaks down how effective we are versus zone or man, how effective our fast break is, like where our shots, most of our points coming from. Is it fast break? Is it half court set? Is it off jumpers? Is it layups? Is it threes? You know, it just breaks everything, single thing down you could think of. And so we use that a lot when we're going back and watching film. But as far as in games and in practices, we'll keep track of, like, if we do mini scrimmages, we'll keep stats, you know, of each team, like assists, rebounds, steals, turnovers, those kind of things in practice. And then for games, luckily at the college level is something I wish I had at the high school level, is like we get quarterly, or every quarter we get stat updates, mm-hmm. which is awesome. So in addition to that, on the bench, my coaches keep track of play calls. So we have a list of all of our play calls and what we get out of them, whether a point or an attempt or not working, or, you know, just we have different kind of signs for each thing, so we can go back and look and like what's working, or at fourth quarter I'm like, what's working, what are we scoring out of, those kind of things. So I have a coach doing play calls and what we get out of them, and then I have a coach that works on the iPad, and we do our shot chart, because the stats that they give us, you know, gives like makes and misses, but they don't give us where the shots are coming from. And right. So I have a and I forget the app, I'll have to, I meant to look it up before this, but we use an app that gives us a shot chart, so we can keep track of the opponent's shot selection, makes and misses, and where they're getting their shots from, and then ours. So it's really, that's been really helpful at timeout or at halftime. I'm like, look at all the X's and all the pluses. So the X's are misses and the pluses are makes. Like, where is our opponent getting all their buckets? Like, in the key, right? Or they've right. hit 5 threes on us or whatever. And so that's like a really good visual of where are they scoring our little points? Okay, this is what we need to stop. And then where are we getting all of ours? You know, like, we're down 10, but we've missed 6 shots in the paint, really good shots. They keep shooting them, keep looking for those looks. They'll fall, you know, those kind of feedback like that has been really helpful.
Cool. Do you set any, maybe the quarter goals or game goals that you use to stat to like determine, hey, if we meet 3 of these 4 goals, for example, we're going to be successful, whether it's like, hey, we're going to turn the ball over less than twice a quarter. Do you guys do anything like that?
Yeah, we do. So my players, we talk about it in the beginning of the season, and then my players will write it up. And then so when I go in pregame talk, we go over each of our goals. And, you know, a lot of it's like keep the opponent below 60 points or 65 points, 14 turnovers or less for the game. So we do like game goals, 75% mm-hmm. from the free throw line. We try to get at least 2 charges a game. We try to get, I think our assists is 12 assists or more. I think it went up to 15, but you know, things like that. So, and then, B plus in the rebounds, depending on the year. Sometimes, you know, I started off, with like plus 10 on the rebounds, you know, but then I felt like, okay, let's just be plus on rebounds and we'll be good.
Right.
You know, this year my team was really small. So if we were plus on rebounds, it was a win for us. And we have those goals and we go back and we go over the stat sheet, and right away, right after the game, we say, okay, we had 20 turnovers and we got out rebounded by 10. So that's the game.
Right.
You know, we lost by 8 or whatever. So we really break it down that way. And I think it's really helpful for them to just have that instant, like, oh gosh, yeah. Numbers, my coach in college always said, numbers and film don't lie. So what are our numbers after a game? And this is, you know, this kind of breaks it down.
For sure.
For us. So, and we run for, you know, if we get out rebounded, we run for those. If we shoot below our free throw goal, we run for that. And if we run for any turnovers over what our goal is, a little extra incentive.
Yeah, no doubt. I like it. Speaking with another coach on a previous podcast about, obviously that means you're not in good enough shape, right? That's what it must mean. So you got to get in better shape in order to to reach that goal the next game.
Yeah.
All right. We're going to take another break. When we return, Coach Bun Wilson will try to beat the shot clock here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast.
Coaches, save the date. The 2021 OACA OBCA Nike Basketball Coach of the Year Clinic will be held Friday, October 8th at Liberty High School. Also, plan to join us for the second annual OBCA Golf Tournament Saturday, October 9th at the OGA Golf Course in Woodburn. You can find more information at or.nhsbca.org.
Welcome back to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. We're talking with Casey Bunn Wilson. She's the women's basketball coach at Linfield University. Coach, for my next set of questions, I'm going to put you up against the shot clock, which you have in college, but we do not have in high school currently. So our shot clock's going to be 35 seconds. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to ask you some rapid-fire questions. And we're going to see how many questions we can get through in that 35 seconds. And most of these questions should be like 1 to 2 word answers.
Okay.
And then if I have a follow-up question, I want you to expound on something further, then I'll have you do that after.
Okay.
All righty. Putting 35 seconds on the clock. And we are starting now. Do you think Oregon High School basketball should have a shot clock?
Absolutely.
You're up 3 points with less than 10 seconds. Do you foul?
No.
How big of a lead do you need before you press?
20.
Favorite way to guard on-ball screens?
Underneath.
You think the high school three-point line should be moved back?
Yes.
What's your favorite pregame meal?
Spaghetti.
That's time, but I have my favorite question I like to ask coaches is, what's one word officials would use to describe you?
Ooh. I have no idea. too quiet, actually, because no one can hear my voice.
Oh,
yeah, no one can hear
voice.
Me, which is probably in my favor.
I was going to say, that might be a positive thing, actually. Yeah,
that is a positive.
That might be a positive. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. There he is. Time, Coach. We're up. That was that was good. Good work. Good work. So, obviously, we call it the shot clock segment. Because it's fun to do some rapid fire questions that way, but also because shot clock in high school basketball is a pretty hot topic across the country.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that you're in favor of the shot clock at the high school level. Can you elaborate on why that is?
Yes. So obviously, I think it's Oregon and one other state is it that doesn't have it still?
Yeah, I think I'm trying to remember. There's actually more states that don't have it than do, but we are surrounded by states that
don't
have it.
Oh, gotcha.
So Washington has it. California has it. I don't think Idaho has it yet, but more and more states are jumping on board. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I think they should have it because we have it at the college level, and it's a huge disadvantage for those that don't have it. It's just a different pace of the game. There's a lot of different philosophy and strategy that goes into having a shot clock, obviously, versus not having it. And, you know, if they're going to continue to play, that would be an advantage to have one.
Yeah. I would venture it makes a more exciting game.
Much more exciting. And yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, there's no stalling.
Right.
I don't know how many championships have been won or lost because of it, but that's frustrating.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Next question has to do with I asked, what's the strangest thing you've seen in a basketball gym? So whether it's a practice or recruiting or maybe in your time overseas, what's something you look back on and you're like, man, that was really strange.
Yeah, so when I was playing in Greece, I played for a club called Panathinaikos, and they have a really big soccer program. Like, their professional program is really good. Huge tradition over there. So we played underneath part of the stadium, if you can imagine. And so I come out at halftime of one of my first games over there. I'm there probably a week, and we start playing, you know, and first game at home. And come out of halftime, and there's a cloud cover of smoke on the ceiling because during halftime, everyone took their smoke break. And it was the strangest thing I've ever seen in my life. And I asked, I had one American teammate, and I was like, what? And she's like, yeah, everyone smokes in here when it's halftime. And I was like, oh my gosh. And then I think the other thing was a couple of my teammates smoking in the showers after the game. And I was like, where am I? I love my time in Greece. It was amazing, but there were just so many things that were so different. It was a culture shock for sure.
Yeah.
So
no,
that was a strange.
Well, there you go.
And a coach was smoking while coaching one of the games. Like, it was crazy.
the old red hour back move. I like it.
Respect
to that. Special situations are things that obviously we do as coaches to help us prepare for those things that come up. I'm curious if there's either a certain special situation you spend extra time on, or maybe a special situation that other people don't practice that you would encourage them to practice in preparation for those situations.
I think the special situation we practice the most is, like, we advance and which side, and probably, like, needing a three to win, or, I feel like that we get in those – with the new advancement rule, I feel like we're in those situations a lot more. And so having more than one or two plays to get a three off is important. I know I've been stuck in a couple games and just had to draw something up because the first two didn't work, or we already had done them, so I needed a third. And so that's something I've been working on over the summer, is just those end of game situations where we need a three, or maybe we just need one. So, you know, obviously, like, we've been just being able to have our kids be in those situations, so when we're in them in games, they're not panicking, and it's like, oh, we've practiced this a bunch. This is fine. This is how, you know, this is what we do. I think it could, you know, win or lose games for sure.
Yeah.
Just that's prepared for them.
Right. Yeah, the advancing the ball rule is actually a great question. I mean, you think that would be something that could help improve the high school game?
I really like it, so I don't see how it couldn't help improve. I feel like there's a lot of, just in the last couple of years, that have been added to the college game. Like, obviously, we went to quarters, and then, you know, a couple shot clock rules. But the advancing is, like, I kind of geek out on it because there's so many things you can do, you know, like, I can advance. Okay, there's a minute and two left, and they fouled, but I have to wait until it's under a minute to advance it. And I have to call the timeout. The other coach can't call the timeout. You know, if I call the timeout, I get to advance, type thing. So it's like, if they call a timeout first, I don't get to advance. So it's very, I like all the strategy of it. It's pretty fun. It makes it way more exciting. I would think it'd be great in the high school game. Like, why not? So,
yeah.
And then just to add on, the reason I said yes to the extension of the 3-point line is because they extended ours this year. So,
right.
I don't know if I was opposed to that or not, but they did it. And so now I'm like, yeah, I think it would be helpful for the transition for high school players if they extended it as well in high school.
Right. Well, it seems like, you know, I've talked to other coaches, either on the podcast or not, but we talked about how it seems like it used to be a team could have one knockdown shooter. But more and more, whether it's the Steph Curry effect or whatever you want to attribute it to, now there's two or three on each team. You know, kids are just shooting the ball better. And so more and more 3-point field goals are getting scored.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting to see how that could affect the high school game if that was implemented.
Mm-hmm. Are they thinking about that?
I don't know that it's been a serious conversation quite yet, but obviously with the NCAA moving it back the last 5 or 10 years, I think it's maybe on the horizon, or maybe just in perspective. I think it's probably there. The tough part, I know, for high schools is our lines are already on our court. So to replace all the lines in every high school gym in America would be quite a process, I would imagine. But
yeah, that would be tough.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. Interesting to see.
Yeah.
How do you go about selecting your team captains?
This is something I've kind of still trying to figure out. But a lot of years I've selected them like with team vote. So the team will vote. And in the last couple years, during my exit meetings, one of my questions is, who do you see as team captains next year? Who do you feel on the team are good team leaders? And so I kind of work off of that because I want to spend some time over the summer, you know, preparing or kind of helping those people that have been suggested kind of like get things going, and especially D3 level, everything, so much off season as player ran, we really need people to step up within the team and do some things and hold people accountable and things. So I've gone that route the last few years, is just kind of asking who everybody feels is that, and if, you know, including them, they can include them if they want themselves. But I don't know, I would actually like to hear, you know, other coaches' suggestions on that, or like different situations, because it's hard. And then with each team, it's different. I feel like each year it's different leadership types. So,
right. Yeah.
Whenever I can have my team play a role in selecting or having something on the team, I feel like it helps with the buy-in. You know, like this is your team. You have control in this. This is, can go either way. Whether it works out or it doesn't, it's on them, kind of thing.
Right.
So, just for them to have ownership in their program at this level, I think creates a lot more buy-in quicker.
Mm-hmm.
So
for sure. Do you assign your captains any sort of specific responsibilities? And if so, what are they?
We have like leadership meetings, but they're not very frequent. You know, it's just like how it's just kind of a check-in, and who's going to be in charge of open gym scheduling and like group messages, and make sure that people are at the workouts on time, and you know, what do you guys want if they're not, and those kind of things. So yes and no. I mean, obviously the jump circle is beginning to meet with the refs, but I think overall it's more of like the organizing outside of the season. And then if there are things that they feel they can't handle within the team, then they come to me with them. But I kind of let them just figure out what they want to do with it too. You know, and some are different than others. Some are like jump in and they're great leaders, and they lead by example, and they're outspoken, and people, you know, respond to them well, and others need a little help along the way. So I think it differs within my captains too.
For sure. Do you have a favorite, team bonding activity that you do with your team?
My team loves to play spike ball.
Mm.
So we play spike ball. And they do that like outside, obviously in the fall and the spring outside of season. We do that a lot. We've done like kickball. We have a few like icebreaker games that we play at the beginning of the year. We do a lot of that stuff. And my weekly, what we call them is cat chop, we do a lot of that, like team bonding, icebreaker, scavenger hunt, different things like that. But I would say ultimately they probably love Spikeball the most.
I like it. When in doubt, set up the Spikeball.
Yeah.
Spikeball,
yep.
What's your favorite drill?
My favorite drill is Perfection 6. And I know I talked about it earlier, but they it's so funny to see them get in their head about it. It's like the easiest, most simple. I'm talking like two-man passing, three-man weave, three-man fly, like super easy drills they've been doing since probably fifth grade. But they have to do them perfectly. And if they don't, they have to repeat it. And it's hard, you know, like if they don't get it done, they have to repeat until they do it perfectly. And so it's just, and I say funny because, I mean, interesting, but once they conquer it, like, it's like they've conquered the world at that point, you know, because
right.
It's been such a struggle. So I like that one, the mental aspect of it, and then just works on fundamentals, and it's good for us to do that. I probably do it twice a week, more so in the beginning, just because I know they'll be running a lot, but then after that, it's just a couple times a week.
And just summarize or clarify, it's 6 different drills and they all go for 1 minute, is that correct?
Well, they should go for about a minute, and again it varies on
right.
like how many players you have and stuff, but they should finish it in 6 minutes, those 6 drills.
Right.
Yeah, so it
six
should
drills.
Take about that. Yeah,
gotcha.
Yep.
So then you throw in transition time.
Yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So they've kind of figured it out, like once, so one team has to go until they do it perfectly and then they can move on, but no one can move on to the next drill without everybody completing the previous one. And so they'll get into, like one group of 3 might be having to repeat once or twice, and then the other groups will get into the next drill already. And so as soon as they're done, they can go.
Gotcha.
So the transition time tends to not be too much once they figured
right.
it out. But
right. Awesome. I like it.
Yeah.
I like it a lot. All right, Coach, I think that's all the questions I have for you today. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. Thank you so much.
If you have any follow-up questions or want to get a hold of Coach Bun Wilson, you can find her contact information in the episode description. We hope you'll join us next time here on the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Until then, coach them up.
Thank you for listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Podcast. Is there a coach you'd like to hear from or a topic you'd like to hear us discuss? You can write us a message on the Anchor website or send us an email at OregonBasketballCoaches@gmail.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast on Spotify.